Welcome to No Bunts, the podcast for the casual baseball fan here on the Athletic Baseball Show. I'm Tass Mellis in studio in Atlanta. And with me, as always, it's super producer JD.
Here I am. Hello.
Hey, JD. And with us, as always, from Taiwan, it's our man, Joel McMillan. Joel, how you doing? Especially because I switched the time up on us. We're recording here on a Tuesday. We usually record on Wednesdays. I'm headed to the NBA Finals tomorrow on Wednesday. Very excited about that. So I did this to you. It's midnight for you, Joel. How are you?
Feel good, Tass. Little sleepy. It's like when I was in high school, you know, staying up for those Jays games on the West Coast. Sometimes you just gotta play through the pain. You gotta do it.
Yes, and as us East Coasters know, games are on the West Coast. Gotta stay up late. Is that a West Coast ballpark you've got behind you? You change your backdrop every single week.
Tass, you would be correct. Yeah, had to go out here and represent the A's with all that's gone on. We're going to get into it later. But yeah, I've always loved the Coliseum. I know it's not exactly the nicest stadium, but I saw it referred today as the world's best baseball dive bar, and I thought that was a perfect analogy for this park. I've always loved the Coliseum, so had to represent with the A's.
Yeah, love seeing all that foul ground behind you. We had some possums who also have made it their home this season. That story earlier when they displaced the Mets broadcast team earlier this season. Great stuff. Yeah, I'm wearing a green and gold shirt. I did not plan that whatsoever. But yeah, we will talk about those A's and how abysmal they are very soon. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we're going to anger some people when we talk about Mike Trout's greatness, because from a casual fan's perspective like myself, I definitely might peeve some people off, but you'll put me in my place as a hardcore baseball lover. In You're Out, a little later, we got to eliminate the career of a Hall of Famer who didn't win a title. What? But first, the five best things in baseball over the past week. Yes, baby. We're starting with Pete. We have another home run chase. Joel, the Mets' Pete Alonso, as we record right now on Tuesday, is on pace for 60 home runs. No NL player has hit 60 since Bonds had 73 way back in 2001. So, Joel, get us started here. Tell us about Pete's chase, his very eventful week, and if you think he'll get to 60 dingers.
He's on pace for it, for sure.
So that means you don't think he's going to get there. And I'm with you.
I feel like it's every year. There's always a guy that gets off to a hot start, and he's on pace to hit a ridiculous amount of home runs. But, like, as it pertains to Alonso, I mean, I think he could do it. And Tass, just looking at the numbers here quickly, since 2019, Alonso is first in home runs, RBIs. He's seventh in slugging. He's sixth in ISO, which measures raw power. And his career barrel rate of 14.1% is almost double the league average at 6.7. He clearly is one of the best power hitters in the game today. You know, talk to me maybe in a month or two in terms of him breaking 60. But I mean, he's having a great start to the season. He's definitely on pace, and he definitely has the ability to do it because, like I said, he is one of the best power hitters today.
Great stats that you threw out there. As a casual, I sometimes do forget Pete Alonso's greatness, so I appreciate that. It will be difficult for him to get there. He's played in every game this season thus far, so he's right on pace. He may miss a few here or there, although he did play in 160 games last year. And unlike when Aaron Judge did it last year, Alonso is right on pace, while Judge was ahead of pace last year and, you know, had a little bit of slack, a little bit of wiggle room. Judge obviously missed a little bit of time earlier this season, although he's picking it up. He's jumping over walls and catching balls as well. So that's magnificent stuff from him on the field. There was also a little side note from him, somewhat off the field, but also on the field. Joel, what's the story there with Alonso?
So Pete Alonso hit a home run last week against, I believe it was the Reds. I'm not sure, but basically he was up to bat, and nature suddenly called, and he said, "I was swinging at that pitch like no matter what, I had to get back to the dugout," and he ended up hitting a home run. Did the lap quickly right into the restroom there, and I think it was a happy ending, according to him.
Great stuff.
But that's pretty crazy, you know, pretty crazy, pretty funny.
Yeah. He had to swing at the next pitch, knocked it out, went back and took care of business in the toilet. He has been, he's had a great year. Yeah. He had that walk off a while back against the great Tampa Bay Rays and Pete Fairbanks, yeah, had a 3-run dinger. So he's had a great season and he's just adding to the lore when you got to go to the bathroom and you can still hit a home run. So great story. Yes, definitely, yeah, one of the best things in baseball from the past week. Moving on. This was also great. An umpire was caught on a hot mic mocking a Marlins challenge. Just to set it up here, Saturday, Memorial Day weekend, everyone thanking their veterans here in the United States of America. The Marlins at the Angels, top 10th, bases loaded. It looks like the Marlins hit into an inning-ending double play. We're going pitcher, catcher, first base, 1-2-3. But the Marlins reviewed because it appeared the catcher never touched home as he tried to turn it. Now, we're going to play you the umpire on the hot mic. So we're going to play a short review. You'll hear the announcers and what the umpire said clear as day. Roll it, JD.
Now, home plate umpire C.B. Buckner had a really good
Miami's
look at
challenging
it.
The out call at home plate.
But the Marlins are going to challenge that.
They got their heads up their ass.
They got their heads up their ass, according to the umpire. They did not. Spoiler alert. The best part is the call was overturned. They scored that run as the player ran home, and they scored again, and the Marlins won 8-5. Great stuff. I wonder if it was the home plate umpire didn't like the fact that his call was being challenged. Joel, what are your thoughts on this? Home plate or this umpire? I shouldn't say it was the home plate umpire. I feel like it was though. Who was angry?
Tess, I feel like this is normal banter. This is normal stuff you would hear during a game. I'm sure this is just common talk, and it just happened to be picked up on a microphone, which is hilarious. And then the fact that it got overturned is even funnier. But I'm sure they speak like this all the time. I don't think this is uncommon.
Are you telling me we shouldn't have included this in the five best things in baseball this week?
Well, no, we should have, because it was picked up on hot mic. Like, it was absolutely hilarious. It cracked me up. Yeah. But am I surprised by it?
No, sir.
Like, absolutely not.
No.
Are you?
Aaron Boone has said a lot worse. Am I surprised? No. I guess it's different. I bring up Aaron Boone. He's been getting into it with umpires all the time.
Oh, yeah.
The difference is, though, umpires talking about a review. Like, yes, it's the same sort of language that you hear when an umpire gets into it with a manager.
Mm-hmm.
But to take sort of this angry tone about a video review, I guess it's not surprising. It's just strange.
Yeah, it's strange. It's unprofessional, but it was hilarious. It was picked up. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done the background to see if this umpire is going to be reprimanded, punished in any sort of way. Probably not. That's probably the end of the story. Marlins win. They've been awesome.
I was watching randomly over the weekend the English Rugby Premier League, like, or the grand final or whatever. Finals of rugby.
Okay.
The ref's mic was hot the entire time. Like, talking over the announcers, and I was just like, who is talking? Like, where is this coming from? And I realized it was the ref, finally, because I just came into the game, like, at the very end.
Interesting.
I was like, we gotta have this all the time.
All the time?
And every time a player would talk to them, you would hear it. They would pick up. Like, so you were hearing the full conversations between the ref and players, and, you know, it was fascinating to watch. I thought maybe it was a mistake at first, but I think that's just the way they do it.
That is interesting. If they're picking up player conversations as well, I don't know how I would like the dual listening of having to listen to announcers and the referees at all times.
It was confusing at first, yeah. But I got used to it, and I was enjoying it. Like, it was crazy. It was just like kind of cool how just casual they were with each other. It's like, yeah, you were over here, mate. So that's why I'm giving you this, and we're pushing back. You guys want to scrum or do you want to kick it? You know, that kind of thing. Like, it's just totally casual.
I guess the audience, unlike an American audience, is accepting of the occasional swear word, I would guess.
I would think.
Because it would seem like the FCC wouldn't let that happen here.
Yeah.
And that's what we've always asked for, covering the NBA, to have this audio only feed. In MLB, we're going to have a show a little later on in the season, basically outlining how the MLB has changed and made it a far more entertaining package with all the camera angles, and all that. And part of it is getting mic'd up. It was a couple days ago. Matt Olson here in Atlanta was mic'd up as his teammate Michael Harris was going back and making an over-the-fence catch. It was an awesome catch. Not a great reaction for Matt Olson, to be honest. That's the kind of thing that's made baseball entertaining. At first, when you said referees, I said, ugh, God, I don't want to hear what the referees have to say. But even watching the basketball EuroLeague Final Four, I heard the referees in the review little scrum huddle that they were doing, and they're basically saying, give me a better angle than that. Give me another angle. Can you roll that back? I like it in doses, totally. of course, to be immersed in the game.
Yeah, I will say that I only watched like 10 minutes of this thing. It was the last final 10 minutes.
Hey, well, thank you for doing your umpire officiating homework. All right, let's move on. This isn't one of the best things in baseball this week at number three of our list of five here. It's quite literally the opposite end. It could be record-breaking in the worst way, but we have to talk about it a little bit. The Oakland A's lost 45 of their first 55 games, which is a first in the modern era, and their relocation to Las Vegas, which seemed kind of inevitable at first, although there were lots of holes being poked in it. It's clearly up in the air, as you outlined on our Instagram account, Joel, @no_bunts. What is going on in Oakland, Joel?
It's definitely not good. But Tass, like you said, I think inevitable is kind of the perfect word to describe this. It's very hard to get a read on the situation, Tass, because in kind of like getting the information for this, you read kind of conflicting things slightly. Some people sound more kind of fatalistic that this is going to happen. Other people kind of feel like there's chances it could be overturned. They had a public kind of discussion about this last night. There was an interesting thread about it on Twitter, but it's just a bad look for baseball, Tass. I think if MLB wants to go to Las Vegas, they need to do it through an expansion team. To do it at the expense of an iconic franchise like the A's, I just think it's a terrible look. The owner's clearly not interested in all at investing in the on-field product. And this is not an aberration, Tass. Like, this has been going on 20 years with the Moneyball A's. Like, he just continues to reap the benefits of owning an MLB franchise, but putting no investment into it at all. It's not fair, and it's at the expense of the fans. And Tass, these people in Las Vegas don't really want it. It's around 3/4 of the people oppose this. So it just looks bad for baseball. It looks terrible for the A's. And I just wish it wasn't happening. I hope that a local owner kind of in the 11th hour comes through and MLB uses some of the tools at their disposal to possibly block this. But I mean, I don't really know what they can do from like a legal standpoint, but I just hope they stay. I don't like how this is playing out right now. It looks bad.
Yeah, there's two sides. There's off the field and on it. On it, they haven't been investing in the team, and the record shining through to illuminate that. They're on pace to go 31-131.
That's awful.
The Major League record for losses in modern-day baseball is 120. That's way back in 1962. So they would beat that. They wouldn't beat the all-time record, which was the Cleveland Spiders. Way back in 1899. I just wanted to say Cleveland Spiders there. And then there's the off-the-field part of it, which you mentioned. Owner John Fisher has not put the money into it, and he will be reaping the benefits of getting the same amount of revenue sharing, even though he goes to Las Vegas, if that happens, going from the nation's sixth largest media market to the 40th, but still getting back the same revenue and still most likely not paying to put a good team on the field. There's a great article by Ken Rosenthal on The Athletic outlining what Fisher is doing here and what he's done in the past and his failings in moving the team, which have happened over and over and over again. So this potential move here to Las Vegas, absolutely not a lock, as we've said on the show multiple times. And I guess their pace maybe did tick up. As I throw out those numbers out there, they started 10 and and 45. They did win yesterday, so they're 11-45 now. So maybe yeah. they'll avoid the terrible mark of the 1962 yeah. Mets.
And Tess, I just kind of want to add this too. Like, if you're a resident of Las Vegas, like, I can understand why you don't want this. Someone like an outsider is going to come to your town and is requiring basically the taxpayers to foot, you know, a quarter of the stadium cost with the tax incentives. Like, I get, you know, like, we've seen this play out again and again where, you know, stadium proposals, there's all these potential benefits they discuss, but a lot of them never come to fruition. And yeah, I can understand why residents of Las Vegas don't want to be on the hook at all for paying for the stadium. I completely get it.
All right, moving on to something that is actually one of the best things in baseball this week, other than that sad situation in Oakland. It's Mariners phenom Julio Rodriguez starting to look like himself again. Last year, I fell in love with this guy as a rook. He was phenomenal, and I just don't like how this season has started for him. Last year, Rookie of the Year, he got MVP votes. He's hit the sophomore slump to start this season, but starting to look like himself. Six consecutive multi-hit games. That's like Ken Griffey Jr., Alex Rodriguez territory in terms of how young he is and the multi-hit games. His OPS has climbed over 100 points over the last eight, from 656 to 762. Things are looking right. No need to panic. And maybe it's all because of a recent deal that he signed with Alaska Airlines. What? Well, this is a good promotion. A lot of times we get bad promotions, Joel. This is a nice one. For every home run he hits in Seattle, 44 fans in the section it lands in will win a free round-trip flight of their choice. That's pretty
perfect.
Great. That's great. My question is, what if he hits it in the bullpen like he has? What if it's not in an actual section? Or is it? Do they just pick like the closest section? Because they should.
Tess, you're asking the wrong guy on that one. I'm not like, sure.
The bullpen
that's a great
is big.
Question.
Yeah. The bullpen is quite large right behind the fence. There's no section. There's no seats there. So people could.
I don't know what would happen.
Yeah. And maybe that's part of Alaska Airlines' scheme here.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one
Task,
of those.
Quick question for you and JD. Where would you take a round trip? Where would you want to go round trip right now if you had the chance?
Yeah, where are Alaska Airlines flying? Are we going worldwide, Joel?
That's a great question.
Worldwide. Worldwide. Wow. Anywhere.
All right. JD, you take this first because you are the explorer.
Tokyo for me.
Nice.
That's a bucket list.
Oh,
gotta
I'll come
go.
And meet you.
Yeah.
I'll come.
I've never been
you.
To Asia. So,
oh,
yeah.
Please come.
But I want to
please
start
come.
In Tokyo. It seems like, you know, that that's the country I'm most fascinated with. But, mm-hmm. I would travel all through Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, you know. I would even get to your neck of the woods there, Joel.
Oh, I'm here. You got a place to stay.
Sweet.
and a great internet connection, guarantee you that. No, it is a good internet connection, actually. We've gotten through it. It's not non-sarcasm. When you have this type of question, when you have a free flight, you got to go far.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm ever going to make it to Australia. Mm. Otherwise, so I got to make that my pick. That's the one for me.
Yeah. Is it because you're wearing Australian colors as well?
Am I in the grand final? it's a tough question, but I wonder, like, what these are probably economy trips for flying coach, I imagine. But
yeah, but you could upgrade.
Oh, that's a good point. Very good point, JD.
Take the free flight and then you upgrade. That's nice. The move.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart. All right, moving on here. The last item here on our list. Five best things in baseball this week. The return of 25-year-old Canadian Mike Soroka. When I said we were going to do this, Joel, I brought this up to you. You said, oh, you love your Braves. Well, I love this story.
You do.
I do.
Yeah, it's a good story.
2019, he was a Braves starter. He was second in Rookie of the Year voting. He was an All-Star. He was sixth in Cy Young voting in 2019. 2020, he tore his Achilles. The next year, he tore the same Achilles. He had a hamstring injury this spring, and Monday, he made his first start in nearly 3 years. I even received an email from the Atlanta Braves about this. before early in the morning on Monday. Mike Soroka is back. You might want to make it out. Well, to watch him. Anyways, it wasn't about watching him. It was just to watch the game. wasn't watching him in person is what I'm saying. So the Braves, yeah, sure, they lost to the A's in Oakland. That was the 11th win of the A's season. But Soroka back is a great story. Yes, I love the Braves here in Atlanta. I definitely am partial to them. But I could have made this a huge topic. Acuña had two hits in one inning. Spencer Strider, fastest to 100 Ks in the modern era. Amazing stuff. Just 61 innings. But the Soroka loss doesn't matter. Just great story. And listen, let me add on to that. Liam Hendricks that we talked about a couple weeks ago, making his minor league starts, overcoming stage 4 non-Hodgkin lymphoma. He's in the majors. He pitched his first inning. Royce Lewis's return to the Twins as well. A great story. So all that, Joel. Soroka, Hendricks, Lewis, Acuña, Strider. I love my Braves is what I'm saying.
As you should, Tess. As you should. Yeah. Yeah, like you said, I mean, like such a feel-good story, you know, with Hendricks and, you know, Soroka happening the same night. Like, it's, you know, it's perfect. You know, I feel it's kind of cliche to say at this point, but, you know, how can you not be romantic about baseball when you see stuff like this? And just the perseverance and just the sheer will and determination to get back to this, you know, like, you know, to overcome all those things they did. It's just fantastic to see.
Okay. That's the end of our list. We got lots of other things to talk about. We're going to talk about some of the greats, including Mike Trout, after this quick break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Welcome back to No Bunts. I got to warn people, the conversation we're about to have might anger some people, might elicit some comments like, what are these casuals talking about? Well, listen, I'm the casual here. Joel is the hardcore. So fire all the vitriol at me. It's on me. Throw it at me. Because we were talking outside of the show, offline, as people say, about Mike Trout's greatness. He just passed Joe DiMaggio on the all-time home runs list. He passed Griffey in the career wins above replacement category. And there's just a gap between how the casual fan perceives Trout and how the hardcore fan sees him, like you, Joel.
Yeah, well, Tess, I mean, let me kind of just ask you, like, you as a casual fan, like, I'm curious, what do you think about Mike Trout? Like, how would you assess him?
Well, yeah, I was off the hardcore baseball bandwagon for a while, no doubt. Grew up a baseball fan. Jays were my first real championship. Then the strike happened, and then the Raptors came to town in Toronto. Then Vince Carter happened. And so I veered in a different lane. I'd say the last 20-ish years, the 2000s, I was more of a peripheral fan. So I'm the perfect person to ask about Mike Trout's perception outside of the hardcore baseball world. And I would say he is an incredible talent. I've known that he goes and wins MVPs, that has had very, very, very little playoff experience. And to some degree, he's a bit faceless in that you don't really know his personality unless you're a hardcore baseball fan. I mean, I shouldn't say personality. We often don't know the personalities of these players, but he isn't a household name by any means. And so whether or not that's baseball marketing and the Angels marketing, or that's just a lack of postseason success where I've watched most of my baseball over the last couple decades, I think that's it's a little bit column A, a little column B, but that's who he is. Three MVPs, Joel. So it's undeniable how good he is. But yeah, he has remained a guy who hasn't transcended, hasn't penetrated the dining tables of America, that kind of thing. So there's that. There's those two sides of it. That's how I would put it.
Tess, I would frame it exactly the same way. Even as a bigger Mike Trout fan and someone who, you know, uses extensive analytics to judge a player, the three things you said: extremely talented, very little playoff success, and basically a faceless guy, not a household name. That ticks all three boxes for me. I feel like that perfectly encompasses what Mike Trout is. And I would say, Tess, like, not only, you know, like I said, to a casual fan, but to someone such as myself.
Okay, so as we talk about Trout here, he has been given this label as an all-time great. Like one of the all-time greats here. Another all-time great, Ken Griffey Jr. Similar situation in that nowhere close to a championship, but Griffey is looked at more favorably than Mike Trout. Why why is that?
Tess, that's a great question. I think the big thing is the timeline in which they were kind of at the apex of their greatness. Griffey was great during a time when baseball card stats were kind of all the rage. That's what, you know, casual fans and hardcore fans looked at: home runs, RBIs, average. You always saw Griffey too, like on SportsCenter. I feel like he was just much more available to see, if that makes sense. But he was just, I feel like, always on the top 10 highlights every night on SportsCenter. So his greatness came at a time, and there's also much less media as well. So I feel like he just had more exposure. So I feel that's one reason why. As it pertains to Trout, Trout basically became a generational talent shortly after the advent of advanced analytics. And there's a large contingent of fans, and that contingent continues to grow now, Tass, where, you know, they use advanced stats to judge a player. Now, you still have a large contingent, Tass, of fans who don't use advanced analytics. And so a guy like Trout, for whatever reason, I truly don't know, but for whatever reason, Trout seems to be a lightning rod for those guys. Chris Russo is a perfect example of this. Like, he acknowledges Trout's greatness, but, you know, he kind of dismisses WAR and he dismisses all the advanced metrics. And he just says, well, you know, like, he hasn't won a championship. Like, that perfectly, you know, encapsulates like that group of fans as well. So I would say the timeline in terms of when their careers and when their greatness took place has had a great effect on, you know, why people see Griffey more favorably versus Trout. And Tass, you also touched on it earlier too. You mentioned Trout being a faceless guy. Tass, that definitely adds also to Griffey's mystique. He was in Nike commercials. He was in movies. You saw him all the time. Whereas Trout's just more of like a chill dude, wants to be a good teammate, but that's kind of it.
Yeah, Griffey ran for president, I saw on a video on the Athletic Baseball Show YouTube account. The coolness factor is definitely affects the way the casual fan perceives Trout. Mm-hmm. To really appreciate Trout, you have to actually evaluate him. And sure. I am more on the casual end of things here when it comes to baseball. And I would never try and proclaim that I know more about a guy's career or try and somehow compare him or put him above somebody else without actually, number one, talking to somebody like yourself that follows the game a lot more closely or has over the last period of time, for a long period of time here. And the greatness is extremely real. Let's go to an expert, Jason Stark, who's covered the game for a very long time. He's a Hall of Famer. And he would put Mike Trout in the Hall of Fame literally right now. Mike Trout was 31 years old, and he recently wrote about players who are either inevitable Hall of Famers or on the right path or have no chance. Trout, at 31, has three MVPs. He's second in MVP voting four times as well. That is ridiculous. So based on those MVP votes, more MVP shares than all but three players in history: Bonds, Musial, and Albert Pujols, all of whom played twice as many seasons as him. So as a casual fan, all that to say, I really didn't know all of those MVP voting final stats. I just didn't know that. So he could literally retire right now and he would be up there. But as you said, I think the biggest thing that we're getting to is the analytics divide. Some people who don't care. Some people who don't see the lack of playoff success as a detriment, but some people do. And so that brings us to our next question. Do you need a championship to be in the consideration of the GOAT discussion?
Oh, Tass, this is the age old debate.
Gotta do it. Well, I just semi ridiculed the old sports heads for saying, oh, these guys aren't going to, they didn't want to. And then I just bring us right back. This is a real sports talky segment. But yeah, we haven't talked on the show about this. And since you live on a different continent, we haven't talked about it offline. Let's do it online.
Let's bring it online.
Do you need a championship to be considered the GOAT?
Tass, personally speaking, I would say no, as it pertains to baseball, because baseball and football are unique sports where individually you can clearly be the best player on the field, but you're so reliant on what the people around you are doing. So if you could be a great player on a bad team, which Mike Trout is, it unfairly affects your legacy. Like, Mike Trout can only be responsible for going up to hit 3 to 5 times per night. That's all he can do, and obviously defend and things like that. But if the pitching's bad, the defense bad, they lose games, that's not on him. I get it from a casual fan standpoint where they say, yeah, but you need a championship. There's always going to be that contingent who just says a guy needs to have a championship to even make the argument that he's the GOAT. I'm not going to say it's right or wrong. I personally don't feel in baseball you need to have one. You could make a case for a guy like Trout, and even really Bonds for that matter. They never won a championship. So me personally, I don't think you need a championship to be considered the GOAT, but I don't know. What do you think?
No, you don't. You can't put it on somebody's shoulders to be able to pitch. I guess his teammate does. His teammate does both in Shohei Ohtani, but
yeah.
No, there's it's just not logical. It is the inevitable trophy that everybody is looking for, and when you discuss the best teams ever, the best dynasties ever in baseball, then yeah, that's a different type of conversation. But yeah, you brought up a good point about baseball and football as well. It's not in their
hands. Tess, I had a question for you though. Is there an NBA player that you can think of off the top of your head that never won an NBA championship, but could, like, you could make somewhat of a case that he was considered the GOAT of a certain era? I don't know if there's like a comparable NBA player. Can you think of one?
It's a different sport, so the answer is no.
Okay.
I think the NBA is different in that a player on the floor at all times, running up and down the floor, affects both ends and can have the ball in his hands a lot of the game and affects the game so much more than Trout, who's sitting for half the game while his pitcher pitches. It's totally different. So no, if you don't win a championship in the NBA, then you can't be considered a GOAT. But I think in baseball, it's fair to say the opposite. It would be nice, like, we're going to talk about some all-time greats in the next segment where we discuss, you know, more, it's more of a real casual fans debate. Which career would you rather have, essentially, from some of these guys like Griffey and Gwynn that didn't win a championship? Those guys got close. I'm sorry, Griffey did not. No, Gwynn and Bonds we're going to talk about. Those two got really, really close. That's the stinky part about Trout. He's played three playoff games. They got swept in a division series. I think you can allow him to be more of the conversation. He would win more of the casual fans' votes if he was close. Like if he got to a World Series like Bonds or like Gwynn. And that's why I'm sure you're going to go to bat for Barry Bonds as you know one of the greatest ever. We'll discuss that later on, but that's it's tough. It's a tough scenario, but I don't think it's required, Joel. And I mean the coolness factor of Griffey is a factor. It should be a factor, I think, as for some people, how his cultural impact essentially. So there we are. Well, let's get to the final question about Trout before we move on to some of those all-time greats. If Trout doesn't win, if he doesn't get that title, how will he be viewed by all types of fans?
I think ultimately it will be a tragic tale. It'll be a case of, you know, what never was and kind of what should have been. But within that kind of overall segment of fans, I still feel there's going to be two different kind of points of view on his career. For non-analytical fans, I think a lot of them will say he was overrated. He never won a championship. That will just kind of hover over him. But for fans who are a bit more analytical minded, they'll just say that dude was an unbelievably talented baseball player for a very extended period of time. We witnessed amazing things. I mean, regardless of, you know, if he didn't have any playoff success, like over the course of 162 games, this guy was, you know, an adult among boys out there playing. I mean, he just makes it look easy and he's playing against the best players in the world. So we truly have witnessed and continue to witness something great with him, although he's clearly, he's going to be 32 this year, I believe. You know, we're going to see the back end of his career. We don't know how he's going to age, but what he did to us from basically 2012, you know, to 2022, it's unreal. They're video game numbers and he's still adding to it. It's just, you know, we truly are witnessing something great.
I said that was our last question, but I do want to follow up because he's 31 right now. Do his 30s matter in terms of how much he accumulates or the stats that he puts up? Does that part, I know it's unwritten, but in terms of just comparing him, like let's say as our man Jason Stark wrote, like let's say he retired on Memorial Day yesterday and he goes into the hall. I mean, what will his 30s really impact the way people perceive him unless he wins a title?
It'll just add to his overall greatness and the aura of his career. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think that narrative of him not winning a championship. I mean, I know I kind of sound like a broken record with this, but, you know, we don't know how he's going to age. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's going to be the big missing thing. And I hope that, you know, he comes back to play. I think he's committed to the next World Baseball Classic. I hope that, you know, even that he's able to win at least a competitive tournament to have something to show for the greatness of his career. Like at least he has that. But I don't know. We'll see. He'll be a few years older and Taz, he's not the best player in baseball anymore. He's still a top 10 talent for sure. Probably even a top 5 if healthy, but he's not the best player in the league right now.
Okay.
That time is come and gone.
All right, one last question then. Sorry, I just got to hit this now since you live in Taiwan. We don't see each other in person. What if Griffey was playing in this era of analytical stat heads? Like, how would Griff, the great Griffey? I know it's difficult to throw somebody into this era, but yeah, the difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how can you somehow try and summarize that as I put you on the spot here?
Oh, Tass, you didn't give me a chance to make notes on this. I got no notes.
Yeah.
Well, it's I think he would be like, I think he'd be a phenom. I still think like his body type, like his athleticism, you know, even though that's from, you know, Griffey's peak was, you know, 20 years ago, he was still like a freak athlete, you know, for his time. So how would he do in today's game?
Yeah, I think and how he'd would still he be perceived?
An excellent hitter. How would he be perceived?
Yes. When all said, let's say it's difficult, like just to transplant eras. Like he has his career, but in the 2000s.
He'd be doing well. Yeah. He's just got that personality. Him killing it on social media, the shoe, everything. Yeah. I think he'd be doing well.
Yeah. Got to see him take batting practice as the hitting coach for the American team at the World Baseball Classic. And that clip blew up. So yeah, I'm sure he would do well in the game around the game. There's no doubt about that. So that's yeah, he would still have an incredible career. He is a special player, but yeah, he is somebody that had a cultural impact that you can't really even the analytics that we have today, you can't quantify that. So
no, you can't.
A special guy. Okay, well, we've got some more Hall of Famers to talk about in our next segment. Let's get to that. We've got to take a break, but coming up, we have to eliminate one Hall of Famer's career in another edition of You're Out.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to No Bunts. Learn something new in the ad break. Just heard an ad for Blue Moon, if you're hearing the same ads as I'm referring to. First brewed in Coors Field, Colorado? Didn't know that.
Didn't know.
No, I was... at the ballpark with our man Seb, who we had a show with a little bit earlier on in the season in April. And when I was in the ballpark, JD, you were there last year, and we're in the hanging, having some Terrapin brews.
Yeah.
Because that's that's what Seb, the associate pilot brewmaster of Terrapin, that's what we had to have. So it was when I did pick up a Blue Moon. It was a little later in the game. I didn't mind a little. A little of that orangey flavor.
Mm.
He frowned upon that.
Did he really?
Oh yes. Gave me a quick cut
because
out.
because it was Blue Moon or because it was an orange in there or because it was not a Terrapin brew.
Yeah, good question. Probably both. Probably the flavor profile and the fact that we're hanging.
Mm.
And I mean, I enjoyed my Terrapin. I had a few Los Bravos yesterday, so
yeah.
Anyways,
I love those, but I like a Blue Moon too.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Time and a place.
There's room for everybody.
Great call. let's play another edition of You're Out. How are we going to do this, Joel? How are we going to do this? We have to eliminate one of the careers of Hall of Fame players. Now, one player isn't in the Hall of Fame amongst these three. There's a very good reason for that. But we have to eliminate one of the careers of Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr., Tony Gwynn. Three greats that did not win a championship. How do you pick, Joel? You start us off, please.
Cass, this was extremely tough, and I picked these three players. I don't know why I made it so hard on myself, but no easy answers here. No easy answers here on No Bunts. Cass, I really like Bonds for sure. Like, I'm keeping Bonds, and so it really came down to Gwynn and Griffey. And I kind of went back and forth, but ultimately I've got to basically cut Gwynn. Gwynn was a generational hitter. He's probably the best pure hitter, I would say, like from the last at least 30 to 40 years, just in terms of, yeah, like he's the best pure hitter. Bonds is the best power hitter. Griffey's kind of a combination of the two. He's a great power hitter, but he could hit for average as well. But when I look at like situations like within a game, like base running, defense, power, Gwynn only I really need if I need like a clutch hit. Like he'd absolutely be the guy. He'd be the guy that I'd want in that situation. But beyond that, like that's really it. I would want Bonds or Griffey for the other things. And Bonds' career achievements are just unbelievable. I'm not going to rehash about Bonds. We all know, you know, what he did, but the fact remains the record books say Bonds. He had video game numbers. You can't just ignore that. And Tass, just to put this in context, Bonds' career war is double Griffey's, is over double. Like that's absolutely insane, you know, and he played into his 40s. He was still a dominant player. Griffey, like you said, cultural icon, great player, would have been even greater if he could have stayed healthy over his career. So for that, I get rid of Gwynn, but it with a heavy heart.
The best player, clearly, as you said, doubling Griffey in war is Barry Bonds. Mm-hmm. The most feared hitter of all these guys. I know it's impossible to quantify, but it sure feels that way. Obviously the walk rate definitely proves that out. I'm with you. If I'm following who the best player was, yes, as you did, the conversation comes down to Griff and Tony Gwynn. I think what impacts me is that Tony Gwynn's great years, in part, were a little before my time. In the 80s, he got to a World Series in 84 and 98. Which I'd somewhat forgotten about considering the Padres' lack of playoff success when I became more of a fan a little bit later on. He had success getting to the World Series, unlike Griffey, who did not. He didn't get there, and so that's part of it. Griffey, the coolness factor, so huge. You say Tony Gwynn, a pure hitter. He also wore 19. Love that number. It's kind of that's why this is difficult, and that's why I'm going to drop Bonds. I'm a baseball purist. He's not in the Hall for a reason. I'm sticking with I'm sticking with the Hall of Fame voters. He's not there. I stand with them. I salute them. not a revered bunch. I understand that. So this is a tough one. This is the toughest one I think we've done in your
for sure. Role.
I don't know why you did this.
Had to turn it up a notch.
JD, do you have an opinion on Gwynn, Bonds, Griffey?
I mean, Barry Bonds is my go-to pub trivia answer whenever there's a baseball question and the answer is a player because it's, you know.
It's a good call.
It's the safest bet I have. I guess I'm going to go Gwynn because I know the least about Tony Gwynn. But that's it. I don't know anything about baseball. I don't know what I'm doing here.
You're making this sound like gold. And adding witty remarks like that. That's a smart move at the pub.
Yeah.
Seven-time MVP. Just throw them in there.
Oh, it's the worst for me when it's like baseball. Actually, it's worse when it's NBA because people know me as an NBA podcast producer. So they expect me. Everybody looks to me at the table, you know, when I'm not with you guys playing trivia. It's just like, oh, NBA, cool. JD's here. He's going to know. Like 50-50 at best. But yeah, baseball, yeah, Barry Bonds, that's it. Rance Mullenix. And Barry Bonds, those are my two answers.
Bonus.
All right. So a couple Gwynns by the wayside, unfortunately, the late, great Tony Gwynn. And I'm dropping Bonds. Got to do it. Tough one, Joel. It's not going to get tougher than that. I know you said you turn it up a notch, but next week when we're back, regularly scheduled programming, There's no way we're going to have a tougher one than that. Who knows if we'll have a year out, but that's as tough as it gets.
What if next week it's Blue Moon, a Terrapin Los Bravos, and something else, and a Budweiser?
Well,
you're out. Well, I guess we already know that. Yeah, that's way too easy.
That was way too easy. You ended it with the answer. Great stuff. Great stuff, everybody. Joel, appreciate it. Make sure you're checking out our social media page. Joel doing some great work on Instagram, @no_bunts. Check us out on the Athletic Baseball Show YouTube channel. We're back next Wednesday, back to regularly scheduled programming. I'll be back from a quick jaunt to Denver to watch first two games of the NBA Finals. Excited for that. Thanks, Joel. For JD, see you next time.